What a wonderful thing we do every fall to just stop for a moment and appreciate what it means to be in community. And we will be looking in November at, November is always when we do stewardship, and we have some exciting announcements to share with you at that time. And we're looking to a rather ambitious year ahead in terms of education and a little bit of restructuring on some of the internal stuff, and we're going to be very excited to share that all with you. But today we are here for a message that I have entitled Act Brave. Act Brave. And I got that idea while I was reading Hidden Problems for Human, Hidden Power. And that's kind of what happens. Hidden Power for Human Problems by Reverend Dr. Frederick Bales. This book was published in 1957, so it's considered a religious science classic. It's really based in principle, and I've been using it a lot for some of my ideas and the direction of the Sunday messages we've been doing. But I want to read you the quote I found in that book that stirred me to create this message called Act Brave. Dr. Bales said, "If we don't act in a manner that reflects what we believe, we eventually come to believe the way we act." And I was so struck by that because this is pure religious science. You know, it's like we actually train people to pay attention to your thoughts, to your words, to your deeds, thoughts, words, and deeds, your actions, and to really take some time to see if those things are congruent with what you believe you believe. And so what we're going to do this morning is look at sort of three different approaches to that idea. One is, how does that idea of acting as if, you know, act brave? It's not saying be brave. You know why it doesn't say be brave? Because there are very few people who recognize that they are brave. In fact, almost every hero, if you see him interviewed on the Channel 15 news at the end of the day, almost every hero will say, "But I didn't do anything that anybody would have done had they been walking down the street at exactly that time." So there's that way that we're all sort of acting brave. It doesn't imply you have to actually be brave. And I want to look at that. How does that fit with our message? How is that acting as if a really valuable lesson for us to align ourselves to? And number two, we're going to look at what does it then really mean to act brave? What does it mean to be brave? What does bravery mean? And finally, I want to take a look at the idea of what brave means if you really don't relate to the word at all. To the idea of bravery is not even on your radar. I want to talk to you about that. That'll be the last thing we do. That's the order we're going to move through this morning. So acting brave, the reality is that acting brave is probably the only reason brave things ever happen. The only reason we have heroes is because somebody happened to be in the right place at the right time to just do the right thing and had that impulse to follow through with whatever they were called to do. And so I think acting brave is not, as I said, it's not about being brave, but it is about allowing a brave action to unfold, and you may never even be able to recognize it as a brave action, and that doesn't matter at all. Acting brave, then, is probably more the norm than being brave. And I also wanted to add to that that we have this tremendous opportunity right now to look at the acts of many brave heroes because of the things that have happened in current events in the past several weeks. I think more than ever before, and I've mentioned this in previous Sunday messages, more than ever before, we have an opportunity to look at the good things people do and to redefine what we believe about humanity, because that's where we start in this faith. We start by inviting you to look at what you believe about God, and just as Einstein said, what you believe about the universe, because that will reflect back to you in your experience of living. And so what do you believe about God? What do you believe about the universe? Is this a friendly place to live? And what do you believe about humanity? If you do not pay attention to the thousands of heroic acts that have unfolded in the last few months, you're missing a gorgeous opportunity to enhance your own ideas and your own personal experience of good in your own life. There's a saying that says, in Latin, there's this great saying. I actually thought I was going to try and memorize it for you in Latin and say it, you know. But then I just said, oh, never mind. It looked very hard. But it says, fortune favors the bold. So there are different variations of it, but the most common one that came up as I was trying to research it was fortune favors the bold. And I can completely understand that, how that idea came to be. If you look at the time where people lived on the planet and they worshipped like the Greek gods and the Greek goddesses and all the mythological stories that go around all of that, the word fortune comes from the goddess Fortuna. So even back way thousands of years ago, people recognized that some people seem to have all the good luck and other people don't. And what is that? We want to do that. So they would worship the god of good fortune. And now, as we progress through history, we can kind of understand that in different ways. We have all these theories about mental healing and new thought teachings that show us, as we activate our mind in a positive way, that there's something in this universe, a spiritual law, that responds back at the exact level of whatever that is, that we're, our thoughts are, our actions, and certainly, and most important, our beliefs. However, I found a more recent quote from Louis Pasteur in 1854. He took that idea that fortune favors the bold, and he changed it to this statement. Did you ever observe to whom accidents happen? Because in the fields of observation, fortune favors the prepared mind. And that's what we teach. We talk, we talk about educating ourselves. I mean, there was such a beautiful, in that whole ceremony we just did, a beautiful segment about the way we have an emphasis on education, and we teach people to train their minds to be able to recognize the power and the presence and the goodness in the world, and in that training, we're more likely then to have an innate awareness of what direction that good is. Right? And then what you focus on is what you get more of. So there's a great tie in there. So I want to say this, and there's been some talk lately, people, and I thought this is a perfect opportunity for me to give some clarity around this topic, and that is that the conditions that you experience in your life, you may or you may not have created. Now, I know that's going to sound a little, because we're always talking about you think it, you believe it, it shows up, and that's it. But I want to give you an illustration of when that is not necessarily the truth, but that we are given, nonetheless, the opportunity to choose what we're going to do with that which has unfolded. So let's say, here's one example, you just learned that one of your married adult children is getting a divorce. You are not responsible for that divorce in their family. You probably, because we live here and not in the East somewhere, you probably didn't even have much say in the spouse they picked for their partner. And yet, as our adult children or our next door neighbors or our long lost friends move through things, experiences, we have a response to that as well. So if my son, let's say, I'm just making this up, but so if my son was going through a messy divorce and there was a lot of drama around the details of all of that and they have children, as the grandmother of those children, I'm going to be concerned, right? As the parent of a son that who I care deeply for, I'm going to have some concern over that stuff. I didn't choose to be pulled into the middle of their situation. I didn't choose to have my heart broken. So now I can choose by thinking a conscious response to how I want to stand up while my family members are moving through something difficult. This is what we mean at the end of the statement, I accept it the way it is and just the way that it is not. We are not saying, let me be very clear here, that we just accept all bad stuff in our life, because we teach a very formal and we teach skills that are very organized that can assist us in changing the conditions in our life if we apply them and if we're willing to take that deep look at what we really believe, which, by the way, is often hidden. Sometimes we can't see what that is. So in that way, then, that this happened to Hugh and I before we moved, many years before we moved to Arizona, we had a new neighbor move into the neighborhood, and immediately they started doing some work on the outside of the house, and they tore up the yard, they moved the driveway from this side to this side, and then for about 5 years, it was just this mess of dirt and weeds, and they never painted, they never finished anything, and it became this real source of irritation for the entire neighborhood. It was like they decreased the value of that's the benefit of an HOA. If you're having a bad experience with your HOA, you can be thankful for that these things don't happen when you have an HOA. And so I noticed that every day I'd take a walk and I had to walk by that house and it would just aggravate me. And I was beginning to study this stuff and I decided that I would apply what I was learning. And so for my entire walk that morning, I surrendered all of that anger and frustration. I surrendered that. I let it go. I created a place for spirit to step in instead of me just walking around huffing and puffing all the time. And because I didn't create that. We had very wonderful neighbors before they moved in. The whole neighborhood was sad. And then I started affirming that, wait, I don't know what's going on in their life. Can I just trust the bigger intention of good? And can I align myself to that good and recognize beauty and recognize love and not feel angry at the neighbor? Because what happens when you're just upset all the time? Oh, I saved a naughty word. That was so good. So then I had the most incredible thing happen, and that was several days down the road, because I had started to shift my attitude. I was no longer experiencing all that frustration, but more than that, one day, these planted pots, blooming flowers and a couple of trees just appeared on the property, and everything started shifting around that energy. So it makes me wonder, how do we hold things in place, the things we don't like, by not being willing to see it from a higher perspective? So the question is, well, there are always questions. The questions are, you know, I mean, every single day, should I go that way or should I go that way? Should I try and get this errand done today, or should I do that tomorrow and do this today instead? We are making choices all the time, and every choice we make has an outcome and an impact. You might say a consequence is a good way to look at it. What do I want to eat today? Do I want this for dinner? Do I want that for dinner? Whose company would I enjoy sitting with this day? And as we consider those decisions and those questions, we become clearer in the ways that we are participating in our own well-being. Instead of just reacting to life all the time, we can rise to a higher place and start making decisions that we know are choices we desire to make. So here we go. We're getting close to that talk about desire again. One of the things that gets in our way is fear, and we don't always name it fear. especially if we have buried it and it's one of our hidden beliefs. We might call it all kinds of things that sound more positive than fear. But think about it. If you are a person who, and there will be some that, don't raise your hand, but there will be people in here that identify to the, relate to this idea. If you are a person who really dislikes conflict a lot, you probably go way out of your way to avoid conflict. And then what happens, because we're not looking at, boy, some of you look real uncomfortable right now. Then what happens is, if you will do anything to avoid conflict, we probably have not, we also have not learned how to say no, or no thank you, or not today. That won't work for me, because you want to dodge that. That is a really good example of a fear-based decision where you're not standing in love and respect for yourself, and you make a decision just so that others aren't irritated by your taking a stand. Maybe you're faced with a big decision. Maybe it's a job choice. You could go this way or that way. And in whatever decision you make, it is going to change. It will alter your future based on what you changed, what choice you made, how you made the change. Or is it you're going to make a move? Do I want to go to the East Coast or the West Coast? Very different choices. But the bottom line is, the choice is not what matters. It's our resignation of our, you know, when we get overwhelmed with a choice, sometimes we don't make choices and we put off situations that then create greater anxiety for us, simply because it's difficult for us to stand in that. I was thinking how after 9/11, I thought, I've never been to New York City and I don't think I want to go now. Well, do I not want to go, or am I afraid to go because something awful happened there? And the same will be true. We'll all have to think about that now. If you love going to concerts, there are going to be certain people that are going to be afraid to go to a concert. There will be people afraid to go to Las Vegas. And so in those ways that fear, that we might not even acknowledge as fear, we might try and rationalize that it's reasonable. But if we don't look at the fear can begin to constrict your life and make your what's possible for your experience in life to be much smaller. So it's not right or wrong, but this is a talk about acting brave so that we can not be limited by the things we just haven't looked at yet. So I want to tell you a story. It's just a fable, because sometimes you'll get the lesson better if it's not so personal. And this story is, and it's a great pre-Halloween story, which, by the way, was my another incentive for this talk. It was like, I was thinking about Halloween a lot. I like Halloween. So there's this story of a wise sage that lived in India. And this wise man is meditating under a tree, and he feels something icky coming by, and he looks up, and he sees the spirit of the plague. Now, I don't have an image in my mind for what the spirit of the plague would look like, but I see it as a cloud and sort of intimidating, and it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good. And so the sage says to the spirit of the plague, "Where are you going?" And the spirit of the plague then says, "Well, I'm going to Bengal, where I shall kill 100 people." And the sage just feels a ripple of, he shudders, a ripple of terror just kind of moves through his physical body. Well, time goes by. About 3 months pass. And now the spirit of the plague is on its way in the other direction. And as it's going past the wise sage, who is again sitting under the tree, the sage feels him coming and he looks at him and he says, "Wait, stop right there. I have a question for you. When you passed by on your way to Bengal, you said you would take the lives of 100 people. But the travelers that have been passing by since then have said there are 10,000 who have passed. Why did you do that? You said 100 and now 10,000 are gone." And the spirit said simply, "I slew but 100. Fear killed all the others." And I really feel as though I see that happening. that something stirs us up, something scary is happening, and maybe it's just flu season. It doesn't matter what it is. But then we begin to change the way we live. And instead, we call it cautious. But there's a certain amount of fear of like, ooh, I can't afford to get sick because of A, B, C, and D. And then we begin to focus so much on that way we shudder at the idea of what could happen. So fear, in that way, I think, kills us little by little, day by day, because we're afraid to live. It shrinks our world, and it does indeed limit the possibility of how much good we experience in our life every day. And our teaching is so beautifully designed for us to be able to face the fear and to know how to go in another direction. And that's what I want to speak about. I think sometimes that if you have trouble connecting to that word fear, some people think it's like, ooh, like real, really scared fear. But I'm talking about the subtleties of it. I'm talking about the way A Course in Miracles says we are always standing in a perspective of love or a perspective of fear. So choose. And if something goes awry, you know, I mean, here's the beautiful thing. We can go to bed, sleep it off, wake up in the morning and make a different choice. We can choose again. We get a do-over at any moment that we recognize that. So if looking at fear is not easy for you, then I would say do the opposite. Look at your life and begin to be very aware of those desires, those primal desires that we feel within us, the things, the goodness that we'd rather be experiencing in our life. And as you look at your desires, this is pure Emma Curtis Hopkins, then you dare, you act brave, you look at that, and you dare to ask yourself, why am I not living that desire? Why is that desire not a part of where I'm at right now? Because that question then will lead you in a different direction. It will carry you into the movement and the skills and the methods that we teach, and you can use them then in that positive way. You can think again, choose again, so that your life can show up differently. Because the only thing blocking you from your good is fear. The only thing blocking you from your good is your lack of willingness to actually look at it. So the other side of your desire is what's blocking it. That step two for Emma is the denial, and you got to face that in order to then affirm the good that you want. It's like Roto-Rooter, cleaning it out, you know, at the core of yourself. I saw this Facebook quote this week. It said, in the ancient world of sailing vessels, there were two great fears. One was the fear of a terrible gale, and the other was the fear of having no wind at all. You know, think about that. It's the same thing. It's the wind, you know? It's the same thing, and the fear can go in either direction. We can, just in the same way that fire can be, sometimes we can't live without it. And other times it's devastating. We could look at the floods in the very same way. It's imperative to have water. We use water for all kinds of things, from transportation to industry. So what we're talking about is that, I like that, it's either the gale, the too much wind or not enough wind. What we're talking about is either too much or not enough. And I would say that I like that idea that there is a law of enoughness. That's how I call it. I like that idea. And so what is enough? You get to evaluate that for yourself, but pay attention to those desires. I have one more story I wanted to tell you this morning. It's an actual experience that Reverend Dr. Frederick Bales shares in this book. And he's speaking about a woman. He has this client who was not anybody he knew, but this woman comes to him, and she declares that she is there for a faith healing. She has come because he healed her brother. And she knows he's a good healer, and so she needs to be healed. Now, Dr. Bales describes this woman as fear-ridden. He didn't call her a hypochondriac, but he said that she had every illness you could imagine, and boy, she really stuck to owning all of the negative things, the symptoms, as a part of her life. And she had tried every remedy. She had gone to many doctors. She had ordered, if she'd see something on TV, she'd go to the pharmacy and order it so that she could try it in her own life. She tried everything her neighbors recommended, and she did it, the whole thing. And he said she had even exhausted the patience of several doctors. And she was now convinced that the only thing that was going to help her was a faith healer. So she says to Dr. Bales, "I'm a very sick woman, and all of those doctors are frauds. They just took all my money. And so I need you to heal me, because if you can't heal me, there is no hope whatsoever." And I'm going to read you what his response was, because it's so good. I want you to hear it through his wording. He goes, "Well, then you're in a really bad situation, because I don't have any power to heal anybody. You are," and then she goes, "Oh, Dr. Bales, you're just being modest. I know you're a faith healer because you healed my brother-in-law of his diabetes." And then Dr. Bales says this, "A faith healer is one who claims to have a healing gift, and people have faith in that gift without any intelligent understanding of the process involved." Now, if you study this, if you've been around to study what we teach here, that would make sense to you, that there's this process that if you're in Holmes used to say, it doesn't matter if you're ignorant to it, the law still works. This law is always creating in our lives. He says, "I have no gift of healing. Your brother-in-law was healed because he changed his own attitude toward life. And you too can be healed, but the entire transaction will have to take place in your own mind." I always think that's the hard part. Spiritual healing is quite different from faith healing because it rests on no person. This is the big point today. It rests on a law of healing. And this law cannot operate for you as long as you spend all your time measuring and describing your illness. Amen. Yeah. Not necessarily a good one. But it's such a meaningful statement that what we focus on is what grows, and therein lies a really good demonstration of it. So I would just speak to you about that idea of pay attention to how you're speaking. Don't be saying things like, "Oh, my arthritis is acting up today." Because when you own it and claim it for yourself, then guess what? That's what you're going to be paying attention to all day. Don't say things like, or just notice when you do. I'm trying not to preach too much, but some things just got to be preached. Can I hear an amen? Yes, I thought. My memory is getting so bad. Perfect place for that. My memory is just getting so bad. Well, don't claim that. Don't own that. Don't even use it in a positive way, like saying something like, "My diabetes is finally under control." No, we want you to go that next step, to look at the belief around the reason you still seem to need to claim it as yours. So, yes, just in the same way they say fortune favors the bold, they also say that the fearful mind tempts providence. That's actually another quote. And we understand that because we are always directing the law. And what I want to be sure I say before I move on to my last point is that it's not like you're jinxing yourself if you use the words wrong. The only reason, the entire reason, we urge you to look at your words is so that you can start examining what it is you really believe. Because your words reveal what you believe. Now, the very word brave is defined as ready to show courage. Isn't that lovely? And so, on that note, I want to also say pretty strongly that courage is not about being battle ready. It's not about putting on armor and getting ready to go to war over something, anything, a relationship, a health issue. It's not about that. That's not what bravery is. But it is about being willing to move through your fear, doing the right thing, even if it's stressful. So bravery is not a goal. We're not talking about it today so that you can be more brave. We're talking about it today so you can see that acting brave is what sets intention, and even just as we think differently, as we remove our thoughts away from our fears and to a bigger truth, there is a power and a presence that's greater than we are and we can use it, then things begin to change in our lives. Now, I have this final thing to talk to you about this morning, and this is the really good news. If you don't feel brave, you are not alone. There is actually this thing that I saw videos on. I watched several YouTubes this week. There's this thing, this diagnosis, kind of, called imposter syndrome. And almost all of us have it. Almost all of us have that. It's, you know what it is. It's like you get that job or you get that new position on the board and you're so excited, and then suddenly you're standing there in the middle of it going, oh no, they're going to find out I don't know how to do any of this. Right? Most of us do this. And not only that, but 70% of the general population actually puts shame around it. And that's the part that becomes debilitating. That's where imposter syndrome is not good for us. Some of the brightest and most successful people on the planet suffer from imposter syndrome. Maya Angelou published her 11th book and immediately said, oh no, this time they're really going to figure out that I'm not a good author. I don't know how to write. Her 11th book! Her books sell, you know, she's well-known and read. There is a distinguished rocket scientist from Caltech who was overheard saying, if I can get a PhD in astrophysics from Caltech, anybody can. So if you feel that it's sort of like you to have those moments of feeling like an imposter, I would just say to you that you're joining the ranks of many, many wonderful, brilliant, exciting people. And if you do not see your own courageous acts, or if life seems to scare you, just act brave. And I want to close this morning by sharing with you a quote that I have said several times from this platform. And it's a quote from Emma Curtis Hopkins. It's actually a long quote that I have paraphrased and shortened and I memorized. And it serves me well to be able to recite this in times of need. And this is what Emma says. Every night of your life, before you close your eyes in slumber, God swelling you with possibility, choose. Choose what it is that you desire to accomplish in the morrow. Choose the character you desire to exhibit, for you have within you an instinct with executiveness, waiting your firm demand. Choose, my friends. Act in congruence with your desires. Speak the truth. Name your good, and then just act brave. So take a breath. And at this time, I would like to call forward any of the practitioners that are in the room this day. Please come forward and help us to maintain that consciousness of the presence of God. And I just feel the love of God within me now. I feel a movement, a quickening within me that is the movement of life. There is a presence and a power indeed. It is greater than we are. It is a power for good. It is right here in this very room right now. It is the infinite intelligence of all the universe. It is that pattern of perfect order, the way that all things fit together. The natural movement, the cycles of life, the birds that fly and the crawly creatures that stay on the ground and climb the walls, seemingly defying gravity. All of life right here, demonstrating the infinite wisdom of all the universe, every person that walks, every blade of grass, every star in the sky. I feel the love of God within me, and I know it is that same activating force that allows all this goodness of life, the harmony, the joy, the beauty. It is that way in which spirits desire to have an experience of these things allows us the privilege of letting life express through us and as us. So if there is to be love on this planet, we must be the conduit for love. If there is to be joy, we must learn to laugh even greater than we have ever laughed in joy before. If there is to be beauty, we must condition ourselves to recognize that which is right before our eyes, always and forever. And so I feel that alignment, the way we unify with these great and magnificent truths. And I speak my word from that place of perfect knowing that divine right action is moving through life itself at all times, that there is no way that the givingness of God can be limited or made smaller or held back. Because it is a divine movement. It is the same way water flows down a hill of a mountain that's melting snow. It is the same way in which the bird takes flight and knows how to glide through the drafts. It is the same way the tides in the ocean change in great variance and in a predictable pattern. And so I know that as we are unified with this truth, as we stand in it and claim it and know it and affirm it, that those same natural patterns ripple into being, into the expression of good in the conditions of our life. I know, therefore, that there is indeed a healing taking place. Because we change our attitude, we change our minds, we monitor our thoughts and our actions and our deeds and our choices. And as we do that, we see that we are guided and directed by that which is larger and greater and more powerful than we could ever imagine ourselves to be. And yet we have access to that power all the time. And so this day, as we open and we breathe in this truth, as we renew the reality of what's possible for us, we accept it. We accept it and we rest in this place, knowing that in the mind of God, there is only good, truth, beauty, power, harmony, order. Oh, we just breathe this in. We allow our lives to be transformed by the very inner awareness of it. And so I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Spirit, for the renewing of these truths in our being and our ability to recognize it and claim it and live it. We know that we are equipped to act brave. And so I release these words into that divine law that always brings things to fruition. I release it, and together we say, and so it is. Amen.